Hey now, we are getting over, and I am the Silver King, Adam Silverstein, here to lead you through these hard times. Dada, with a special edition of your favorite professional wrestling podcast. That's right, Getting Over is back once again, and we have none other than the man, Becky Lynch, joining the show for a special one-on-one interview with yours truly. Her new book, her memoir, I should say, comes out today, this Tuesday, as you're listening to this podcast, and we get into it all over a 20-minute interview that you will hear coming up just momentarily. On the other side of that conversation, Vintage Chris Vanini will join the show to break down everything that we discussed with Becky. You are going to want to stick around for that as well. Now, before the man comes to town here on the Getting Over Wrestling podcast, allow me to remind you that this show
is all about Defy.
So please head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Take a little extra time. Leave a 5-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. Don't forget to give us a follow on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. And please also remember,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up. You get bonus audio, the fastest 5 minutes in professional wrestling, instant reactions to Raw, NXT, Dynamite, and SmackDown every single week, along with exclusive news posts every Friday. And for those of you who are already subscribers, you got a sneak peek at this interview last Friday. Now, before we get to the main event of today's show, a reminder that this is a special Two for Tuesday here at Getting Over. So not only do we have this special show, but we have the entire WWE Week in Review coming up later on Tuesday. So I'm glad you're listening to this, but don't forget to listen to the next show as well. With that said, it is officially time for that main event. Becky Lynch joining the Silver King here at Getting Over. For those of you who are long-term listeners of mine, you know that I've been lucky enough to get the opportunity to interview the man on numerous occasions, prior shows, stories that I've written, and so forth. But this is the first time that she is joining us right here at Getting Over, and I could not have been more thrilled to sit down with her. So folks, with that said, allow me to introduce Becky Lynch as the man joins Getting Over. Beyond excited to welcome Becky Lynch to the show, whether you call her the man, the mom, big time Bex, the Irish last kicker, you'll soon know her as the best-selling author Rebecca Quinn, whose fantastic new memoir, Becky Lynch, The Man, Not Your Average Girl, will be available on Amazon and wherever you buy or download books or audiobooks by the time you hear this interview. You'll also catch her fighting Rhea Ripley for the Women's World Championship at WrestleMania 40, airing April 6th and 7th live, 7 p.m. Eastern on Peacock. Becky, I know you're running the gauntlet right now, okay? It's great to have you here. Between promoting the book and WrestleMania 40, you're still making towns. You're putting on bangers while doing it. You're also being a mom to Rue at this entire time. Oh, and you have a husband as well. And not for nothing, you're coming off meeting the damn president and becoming a U.S. citizen. This road to WrestleMania has to be even easier for you than 5 years ago, right?
Oh, yeah. This is a big one. This is a big one. I thought it was a great idea to release the book around WrestleMania, and I still think it is. But I need lots of coffee. But that's great, because I love coffee. And thank you for that wonderful introduction, and thank you for the setup in the background. That's fabulous.
Don't always do that. Just so happens I happen to have the materials this time, so figured I would go ahead and do it. You know, it felt like, as I was reading your memoir, every 3 or 4 pages, I was jotting down something I wanted to dig into with you. But the overriding theme, and that is great, you're right, but it's you continuously overcoming that lack of self-confidence, the imposter syndrome you talk about so frequently. Now that you've written this book, you're sharing your story with so many people, and we're similar ages, so becoming older helps as well. Do you feel like you're able to shed a lot of that? Have you moved into a new stage of confidence in yourself?
Yeah, I think so, especially when it comes to wrestling. Like, I always think that you don't get confidence by thinking about having confidence, right? You get confidence by action and by trying and failing. And with wrestling, you're constantly trying and failing, and you're sometimes succeeding. Hopefully, the balance shifts in the way of successes more than failures. And I think that's really happened to me lately. And then I think if you've spent so long doubting yourself or thinking you're not good enough, eventually you get sick of yourself. You're like, oh, come on now. It's we've done enough of that. Let's believe in ourselves a little bit. Let's see how that works out. And but the other thing is that it's going to be omnipresent. You know, it's always going to be there. And there's always going to be that voice. And I think you just learn to manage it better. You know, I think that's part of the human experience is that we're constantly questioning what we do. I think that's how we survive standardly, right?
Yeah.
I think is that we question ourselves, we learn, we take criticism, we grow. And so we're always doing that. And when you're, you know, when you're in the public eye and you're in wrestling and everybody has their opinions on everything that you do, then you get a lot of opinions coming your way. And the trick is to how to silence them and believe in yourself and be true to yourself at what you want to do and the stories that you want to tell.
Well, let's talk about that concept of people having opinions on everything you do and getting involved in your private life, which is not totally their business, but there's one revelation after another in your book. And what you shared about Fergal, Finn Balor, was obviously personal. From afar, we were always led to believe he was your trainer and you're strictly friends, but you explain in detail that your relationship was much more intimate to the point he was your first real love and broke your heart leaving for Japan. Besides the fact that it's none of our business, was there any reason you guys kept that secret? Did you or he have any reservations about sharing those details now?
I actually thought it was common knowledge.
No, everyone, I mean, I double checked because I was like, am I the only one who didn't know this? And no, it wasn't.
So one of my friends pointed that out to me after I'd written it and sent it in. And I gave him a copy to read and he was like, oh, just be aware that this is going to. And I was like, did everybody not know that? And he was like, no. And I was like, oh, all right. I just definitely live in my own little world in that regard. Well, that was one of those things where I did not know that it wasn't common knowledge. But the other thing was that was such an important relationship in my life. And that continues to be an important relationship, like our friendship and having gone through so much with Fergal, from him being my trainer to my first love and all of those things, to then just being a great sounding board and us both being at the top in WWE, and he's got his wife and his family and he's so happy, and I've got my husband and my child and we're so happy, and it's such a wonderful relationship that you can grow apart and still maintain that mature bond. I think that's a good thing to see in there too, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sorry, no, I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's funny how much it repeats itself, and not just romantically, but obviously with Kevin and Sammy and Natalya, so many people were involved in your growth as a wrestler, and you're working with all of them, some on a day-to-day basis. Obviously the brands are different and, you know, you don't necessarily get that, but you're seeing them all the time. And there's no way back then you ever could have assumed that.
No, absolutely not. Well, maybe. Like, I always knew Fergal was going to be a huge star, and Sammy and Kevin, because they were both so great, and Natalya. Yeah, no, to be fair, I could have seen it all.
I meant that all of you would be working together. Though the fact that you're all in the same company doing the same, you know, thing together, that's pretty
great. Yeah, it's really cool. But it's like they're like brothers to me, you know, like and Maddie is like a sister to me. We're all so close, because I think when you've gone through that and you've known each other from a past life, there's an extra special bond. But I look at Sammy and his wife as some of my best friends, and Kevin the same, and like Sammy's son and my daughter are best buds too, and that's very cool. Like, they love hanging out with each other. they play so well together. So like anytime we get to be in the same city together, it's great. It's great.
You also cover the ups and downs of your relationship with Charlotte Flair. And it felt like so many of the issues were circumstantial, going from literally being so close on the same brand, having fun making towns together, being each other's confidants, to physically being apart on opposite brands, dealing with inconsistent creative, both of you understandably wanting to protect yourselves and your goals going into WrestleMania 35. You could say if someone purposefully wanted to split up a friendship between two wrestlers, those are the circumstances they would create. And then around War Games, you know, this past, you know, fall, it's or winter, whatever you want to call it, it seemed like you guys made amends to some degree. Do you attribute some of that to taking stock of your relationship while writing? And how do you feel about where you stand now?
Yeah, look, I think the undercurrent of all of it is love, right? Like that's, you get more hurt by the people that you love than the people that you're like, you don't care about, that you dislike or that you feel indifferent to. But I think that there's so much love there. And I think that's always been the case, is that even through the rough times, like if she ever needed anything, I would have always been there. And I'm pretty sure that she would say the same thing. And so, but also like having that hostility towards somebody kind of weighs on you. You know what I mean? And I think life is too short for that. And we've witnessed that. We've seen the tragic passing of people way far too young, like Bray Wyatt, like Luke Harper. I had another friend who passed away that was very close to me in the last few months too. And so all of those things, I think as you grow and mature, you realize that these petty differences aren't worth the toxicity it leaves in you and the weight that it carries.
So what we saw in the ring and the press conference, that is the genuine relationship now.
I would say so.
That's fantastic, especially, you know, given the time that you guys spent, let's say, apart to a degree. I also appreciated how open you were calling out, let's call them questionable creative decisions during your WWE journey. Because as viewers, we get vocal, right? We scratch our heads sometimes, but we always wonder, the talent, they got to feel the same way as us, right? And it almost felt like you were reassuring me as a reader. No, it wasn't just you. That was batshit or confusing or straight up bad, right? So thank you for that. Yeah. But obviously, no booker is going to be perfect and make everyone happy all at the same time. Both Paul Levesque taking over creative and as a top talent involved in major storylines, are you seeing a significant reduction in those oversights? And how would you say things have changed on a weekly basis or really just overall?
Consistency, I think, is the name of the game. And so Paul tends to have a long-term vision of something and an idea of something, and then and executes, whereas before, you know, it was notorious that the show was being rewritten as it was going on, and you know, we were live on TV and people didn't know what was happening in the third hour, and there would be stories that would start and then Vince would change his mind and things were, you know. And so with Paul, it's he sees things through. And for better or worse, that gives a different viewing experience, because so whether you like the story or not, well, you're going to see it through. But also, I think it's good because you might not like the story on week two, but you don't know where it's going on week four. And so if we listen to people saying, yeah, but we don't like the story on week two, well, then you might never get the magic that you were going to get on week four. And so I think it's important to listen to the audience to a certain degree. But here's the thing, is wrestling is intended to elicit emotional responses. For example, When I beat Bianca Belair in 26 seconds, people were outraged. Good. That was the intention. You were meant to be outraged. You were meant to want to see her succeed. And then I think I started talking about her hair, and people were outraged that I might touch her hair. And they were outraged. And how dare they? But it's, if you don't know where we are going, and also I am a heel, you are meant to be outraged by the things I do. And please understand that that is a heel. A heel isn't like somebody that gives cool zingers. It is somebody that is unlikable, that you want to see the baby face overthrow. Doesn't always work out like that. Anyway, I could go on a tangent, but the thing is that if we don't see things through, then you don't get the magic at the end of the story. And it is important to listen to an audience, but it is also sometimes, for the greater good, important to not listen.
No, you make a lot of sense. And I also appreciate you pointing out that, especially these days, to be a heel, you actually have to do things people don't like, not just be a person they're not supposed to like. And that is
But then just do whatever you want and kind of but that was Stone Cold, you know. We all wanted to do whatever we want, you know. So
we do awards here every year on the show. We call them the Meaties out of respect for Big E. You were named our Women's Wrestler of the Year for 2023. Obviously, didn't get a chance to tell you until now. And a huge part of that was you going banger after banger late in the year. Zoe Stark, Falls Count Anywhere, Trish Stratus in the cage, exceptional. And then that run with the NXT title, working with Tiffany Stratton and Lyra Valkyria, but also ensuring Xia Li and Indi Hartwell and Tegan Nox, they all got spotlighted. It has to be up there, at least in my opinion, with the best, dare I say, maybe most fulfilling, not to put words in your mouth, stretches of your career. Did you feel like in that moment you were firing on all cylinders? And was that NXT run your creative pitch, a collaboration, or something you took and ran with?
No, it wasn't my creative pitch. Like, I would I mean this in the best possible way. I would never pitch to go down to NXT to take their title. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I'm doing all right for myself. And so, but when it was suggested to me, then I was like, yeah, let's go, because I've learned so much, and I've gotten to main event WrestleMania. I've gotten to main event many pay-per-views, many Raws, many live events. Like, I've gotten to be in places that these girls haven't gotten to go to. And I never had that. I never had that to learn from. Like, I had great women around me. And don't get me wrong, I don't mean that to be disparaging to any of the girls that came before me, but they'd never had the opportunities that I had. They'd never been in the positions that I've been. And so I think it's very important that whatever I have learned, that I can go down and teach people coming behind me, because I want women in wrestling to continue to thrive and be top stars and continue to change the game and make it a more equal landscape. And we've already done that. There's a little bit more work to do, and so you need people that can do that.
Yeah, it's great to see, because I mean, just like Natalia, perhaps before you, ensured that you guys had the opportunity, you're now doing that for the younger generation. And it's obvious, but not only appreciated, they're actually getting better from it. And that's, of course, the goal of the entire deal. There's murmurs out there, obviously, about your WWE contract, as well as your husband's too, that they're up later this year. I believe you were asked about this last month, but has there been any movement towards re-signing since then? Have you re-signed? And if not, is it simply a matter of details at this point? Is there any doubt that you're going to remain with WWE?
All in the ether. It's all up for conversation.
Okay.
Yeah. Nobody's actually asked me that.
Okay.
Nobody's asked me that. That's you're the first person to ask me about that.
Well, I'd hammer you with a follow-up, but clearly I'm not going to get anything out of you there as much as I try.
No, well, you know, like nobody has said anything to me about it. And so I was wondering if anybody had noticed.
Well, let me ask you this. As you take stock of everything, I presume Rue's starting school soonish. Love her name, by the way. I forgot to mention that earlier.
Thank you.
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah, as I would hope you would, right?
Well, no, one of my friends told me, she was like, when you pick a name that you like, say it like 100 times a day, because that's how many times you're going to end up saying it. And so I actually did. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, I still like it. Still like it. Yeah,
cool. That's very good, especially because now she's stuck with it. But yeah. With her, you know, I presume growing up, obviously starting school, how much longer do you see yourself wrestling full time? And whenever you do stop full time, do you think it's going to be one of those situations where, look, that was the part of my life and it's over? Or are you someone who's always going to want to come back for periodic short little runs, kind of like a John Cena?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to these questions. I genuinely don't, and I'm being so vague, and I don't mean to be in any way cagey, but I feel like I have a great mind for wrestling, a great love for it, and so it's always going to be there in my heart, and in my head, and it's, you know, it's part of my family, you know, it's the reason I have my family, so it's so important to me. I just don't know what that looks like in the future. I genuinely don't have any answers for you, because I don't know. I think life continues to surprise me in wonderful ways recently, and you can make all of these plans, and sometimes they don't fall. They don't go the way that you intended. But in the long run, it's something works out and something becomes better than you have expected.
Okay.
And I feel like that's been my whole run.
Yeah, it's true. Being open to whatever opportunities come up, that is very signature Becky Lynch. No question about it.
Yeah.
I will get you out of here on this. You mentioned, I think towards the end of the book, that you don't watch your matches back. Is that just because you know you're going to pick them apart and be overly critical of yourself? And if that's the case, do you not have a best or favorite match or one that you're most proud of?
Well, I feel like, you know, you can feel it. You can feel it in the time. And like, for example, WrestleMania 38 with Bianca, one of my favorite matches. The cage match with Trish Stratus, one of my favorite matches. The Last Woman Standing with Charlotte, one of my favorite matches. So I don't know how they look, but I know how they felt. And I liked how they felt. So I like to leave it on how they felt as opposed to me watching a big book.
Yeah, that is fair enough. Well, look, I appreciate your time so much, and we'll get you out of here on that note. As mentioned, you can find Becky Lynch, The Man, Not Your Average Girl, available on Amazon, wherever you buy or download books or audiobooks. By the time you hear this interview, you'll also catch her against Rhea Ripley for that Women's World Championship at WrestleMania 40, April 6th and 7th, live, 7 p.m. Eastern on Peacock. Becky, I know there are a couple of those tough ones out there at the end that you weren't perhaps ready for, but I appreciate you so much. And thank you for giving not just so much of your time, but such comprehensive answers as well.
Thank you so much. And I did not intend to be in any way vague.
No. There's things you need to protect.
No. It's not even protecting. It's I don't know. And nope. That there's something so fantastic about that right now. And I'm really enjoying that space. I'm really enjoying it. So I'm not being in any way cagey. I'm just, I don't know. I don't know what the future holds. And it's exciting.
Well, big smile on your face. That means you're excited about it. And that's all that really matters.
Thank you
so much. What a great time it always is to speak with Becky. I was so thankful that she gave us that much time and the opportunity to sit down with her, given how busy her schedule legitimately is right now. I mean, you heard all the things I mentioned at the top of that interview. She's not only doing a book tour and a bunch of signings, she's still appearing on TV weekly. I don't think she's missed a single episode of Raw. She's, of course, in a huge match at WrestleMania, and she was made a U.S. citizen and met President Joe Biden all in the last couple of weeks. So it was absolutely wild. You could tell she was kind of exhausted, and she was just getting started. I was the first one of the day. And I don't mean you could hear that from her voice. I just mean visually when I saw her, you knew she was getting ready to do like 20 interviews, and I eventually did see some clips of her in the same outfit, in the same setting, doing interviews. So clearly she was going through the gauntlet that day. Now, you may notice there were some questions asked that were like primed for follow-ups. Unfortunately, we were limited to 20 minutes, and I really could have sat down and spoken with Becky for an hour, if given the opportunity, 2 hours. There's so much to ask her, so much to talk about, and there were so many topics I wanted to cover that I just wasn't necessarily able to follow up about, whether that's some of the comments she made about creative, the NXT run. I would have loved to ask her about Tiffany Stratton, for example. But Chris, and welcome to the show, by the way, most notable coming out of that interview, of course, was, let's call it a non-answer to her WWE contract coming due. Now, listening to it back, the answer she gave during the interview, it was evasive, but I do feel that she was legitimately caught off guard by it. And when she circled back later, as we were wrapping up the show, it came across to me that not only does she legitimately not know what she's going to do, she might actually be somewhat conflicted about it. And I don't think, Chris, that means like she's making a choice between WWE and AEW or anything like that. The facts are that her husband has said he's a WWE lifer. They're both in main event level WrestleMania programs. They have a tour bus with a nanny for their daughter, Rue, so that they can travel to shows and all be together. I'm not sure what impetus she would have to leave WWE unless she was getting such a massive bag from another company and she had no other legitimate financial choice but to take it. So in lieu of that, it came across to me like she's deciding between wrestling full-time, maybe reducing her schedule with WWE, or perhaps even taking a break and trying acting out. She's had a number of small roles on shows. She filmed one for Marvel. I think it was The Eternals. Ended up getting cut. Her character got cut from it. What I do know is that she's in the top women's storyline for WrestleMania. Her book release is being done in part by WWE. And she's been advertised for some stuff. I don't know how solid it is going into the summer, even though I learned with 100% certainty that her contract does expire as of right now at the end of May. So we have a lot of talk about coming out of this interview, but I think that answer or lack thereof is the one that might get the most attention. I wanted to see what you perceived from it now listening to it for the first time.
Yeah, I just took it as she's at a point in her life where she evaluates what she wants her future to be. And that's not abnormal. You know, she is 37. She's got a kid now that's a couple years old. And, you know, you've got Roman Reigns on a part-time schedule. Mm-hmm. You've got Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae stepped away from WWE for a bit when they had a kid, came back type of thing.
So to be fair, his contract expired and there was concern about, you know, how he would be used at the time he left. I'm just clarifying. It was a different situation slightly.
But it's not like he immediately jumped to AEW or something like that.
No,
he
correct.
He took some time off.
Correct, absolutely.
Essentially. And so, I don't think this is a situation where Becky Lynch would go anywhere else. There's literally no reason. You laid out all the familial reasons. She is one of the greatest women's wrestlers of all time in WWE and is treated as such. There's no reason to go anywhere else unless you're at the very end of your career and you want to do an Edge thing, essentially.
Right.
But that doesn't appear to be it. But it does sound like somebody that at a time when when your contract comes up, that's when you evaluate what you want the next step in your life to be, whether
Absolutely.
You keep doing what you're doing or whether you do something else. And she's at the point in her life where she can consider multiple things. And that's good for her. So, I mean, from her perspective on that side, yeah.
I was a little surprised, though, that given, you know, you're talking it's less than 70 days away from expiring, that she didn't have something a little bit more solid there. But it's also very possible that there's a factor of, look, she's fully entrenched in the book tour. WrestleMania is coming up. Like, this is the craziest time. I mean, she said so in the interview. I was like, this doesn't even compare to WrestleMania 35. Because in the book, she's talking about how crazy the build to 35 was and how she was nonstop and was doing media and wrestling and this and that. And my first thought as I was reading it in the book was, wait a minute, you're doing three times as much of that right now. And you have a child on top of all of that. So this is a whirlwind for her. So I would not be surprised if she's saying, hey, let's get through WrestleMania and then I'll make a decision. But I will say this, Chris, The fact that she has not re-signed as of at least right now, when we come to doing our WrestleMania picks, that'll give me a little bit of a pause in terms of what my prediction is going to be for that match.
That is true. That is true. Also, I mean, it's also possible, again, it's pro wrestling. She may have made her decision.
Oh, yeah. She could have been kayfabing me. Totally.
It's totally something we know wrestlers like to do. I think we are saying it's fair for her to, if she decided to step away or if she has decided to step away, we don't know. It would be an understandable decision.
Of course.
For a number of reasons.
Yes. Yeah, without question. It's just strange that we're in this little zone. And this is one of the reasons it was so topical and I wanted to bring it up is because, you know, the story out there as of right now is that Becky Lynch, Drew McIntyre, and Seth Rollins have expiring WWE contracts. And those are three people in main event caliber matches at WrestleMania. In the case of Rollins and McIntyre, a co-main event for night two. And in terms of Becky, what I think is fair to say, you know, not that there's a quote unquote women's main event, but I mean, it would main event night one in most other scenarios. You know, if the card was not built the way it happened to be built this year for WrestleMania 40, it's a top tier match. So the fact that three notable people are all in similar positions, at least we think as of right now, made it notable, made it worth discussing. So I'm glad we got the opportunity to do it, but that's not the only thing that we discussed in that interview. Sorry, go ahead. Was there something else?
Well, I was going to say real quick, just gaming it out here, if she were to step away, the WWE women's division is so freaking deep right now. I mean, it's a credit to Becky Lynch's all-time talent that she can stand out and stand atop this group, but you take her out, there are still a lot of people who can fill in the gaps and take advantage of a spot opening up, which I think if you're WWE, it's a good situation to be in, where you want Becky Lynch back, obviously, but if she decides to step away, you've got people ready to step up.
That's totally accurate, but it's simultaneously missing the fact that no one replaces her. So someone can fill in the TV time and the match time and the storyline time, but what she has done for that women's division, that's why I asked her about the run with the NXT title and why I wish so badly that I got the opportunity to follow up about it. She did so much in the second half of 2023 with Zoe Stark, Trish Stratus, the NXT championship, and all of the women she worked with both on the main roster and in NXT. I mean, why do you think Tiffany Stratton is so popular right now? Yes, a lot of it is because, sure, she's beautiful and she's athletic and all those things, but she was put in the damn spotlight in a main event, premium live event match with Becky Lynch for that title. I don't care what you grade the match, a 4.5, 4.75, you know, whatever you graded it, a top tier match. And she had two of them, by the way, with Becky. So when she comes up to the main roster, she's now Tiffy time getting chanted, you know, in Australia, people chanting for it on SmackDown. She doesn't have that status without Becky. And the women's division in totality, we talked about all the people that Becky helped elevate and give TV time to over the latter half of 2023. You don't just replace that with another woman having her matches. And I know you weren't suggesting that. I'm just saying you're right. Like, in reality, you're not going to miss her on TV for if she goes away for, like, let's say 6 months. But man, when she comes back, you forget how much she brings to the table beyond just being someone who is atop the division.
For sure. She is a bona fide superstar.
Yeah.
And WWE will need to make the next crop of superstar level people.
Yeah, for sure. Now, as mentioned, there was a lot more we discussed, of course, with her. You just heard it. I found it so interesting the way she addressed the relationship with Finn Balor, because going into reading the book, I thought it was always unique. Not that men and women can't just be friends, but given their shared history and background, I thought it was unique how he was just her trainer and friend. And that's what we knew. And that's what had been said for years. And then super early in the book, and I haven't said this yet on the podcast, this is a book that is 100% worth purchasing and reading. Or if you want the audiobook, she does the voiceover. So listening to her tell her own story, I'm probably going to download that separately, because generally in audiobooks, they start expanding on stories and stuff the authors do when they do it themselves. They don't just read straight from the page. But super early in the book, and I'm not going to give away all the details because I want you to buy the book, but she reveals that they were romantically entangled and she had a crush on him from the very beginning. And that romantic entanglement was so important, that it had a true influence in her life more than just being a trainer and friend. I mentioned it that he was her first love. And when he went to go to Japan, she was heartbroken over it. I just find it so funny that she assumed people knew. And look, maybe they never actively tried to hide it, but no one asked all these years. I just feel like it would have come out at some point beforehand. Maybe Finn never brought it up because he thought, you know, if I do mention it, people are going to look at her like a different way. That's how she got in the business or something like that. I don't know. But the fact that they were in a relationship makes so much more sense than them never having been in one.
Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, in the interview when she seemingly surprised that people didn't know. I mean, like, I remember one of my first big Becky Lynch memories was that promo they did in NXT before her title match, I think it was, where they gave her her backstory.
Mm-hmm.
They gave it like we didn't really know. They gave us her backstory and the connection she had with Finn Balor. And you saw that and you're like, oh, that's really cool. And in the back of your mind, you're like, huh, I wonder if they were ever together.
Right.
But it wasn't something I was like, oh, they definitely were. But,
of course.
So you think about it, but I never like thought so. I never knew. I'd never seen it anywhere.
Oh yeah, I always assumed by it never being mentioned that they were just friends. Like anyone else would be.
Right. Right. And look, it's Finn Balor. She had a crush on Finn Balor. Look, everybody I think can understand that. We've all seen Finn Balor. So like it's a thing where I don't know. I don't want to say surprised that she talked about it, but it is a real serious, not serious, but like real life thing to put in a book like that, especially when, you know, a couple months ago, Seth Rollins and Finn Balor were in a feud, not to say that they have any bad blood toward each other or anything, whatever, but had this book come out a year prior, maybe that gets thrown into the storyline. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? By all accounts, they have not just Finn and Becky, which she said in the interview, but all three of them have a really great relationship behind the scenes. And of course, it has nothing to do with that. That's years and decades in the past. But I found it interesting. And in terms of your Finn Balor comment,
it'll look good, but she's got me saying, hey, now
we can be honest. The guy has washboard abs and women love him. So yeah, it's not a surprise by any means. I also thought, Chris, it was great to hear that she and Charlotte Flair are mostly maybe bordering on completely being back together as friends. People watching WWE when they were in their latter stages in NXT and then eventually when they got called up to the main roster, you will remember how truly inseparable they were for such a long time. And really in this book, as I said in the interview, you can literally draw from point A to point B how their relationship got frayed due to no real fault of their own, like just professional competition being put against one another, both in storyline and in real life, fighting for the same spot. I'm not even joking when I say this. I was thinking about this as I was listening back to the interview. Their story as friends, add in the fact that it's the build to WrestleMania 35, add in the fact that Becky starts dating Seth Rollins during this time, and I believe Charlotte Flair was getting into it with Andrade to a degree, and if not then, certainly more recently, as they still had that frayed relationship. That's a real unique story that could be told, maybe even as a movie or something like that. I mean, two women, professional best friends, coming up in their careers, going to this apex event, finding love at the same time. I mean, that's a real unique story. Now, you know, I don't think that'll ever happen necessarily, but I just couldn't help but think about it when, as I read the book, and all these individual moments between them that she tells, and then hearing that they've kind of come back and, you know, rekindled their friendship, and hopefully that'll only continue growing further. It's a pretty damn sweet story, I gotta say.
I've always been like never 100% sure of how much of the Becky Charlotte stuff is real and how much of it is not, because they have very much turned it into a storyline.
Yes, they have.
Smart, which is what you do, which is when they had the, I forgot what show it was at, but they had a, I think it was a title match between the two of them, and it was a banger of a match, and the intensity and the electricity was off the charts because their frayed relationship was the story. I don't remember what show that was, but I remember being an awesome match, and you could feel all of that. So I've always been like, how much of this is kayfabe? How much of this is real? Even if you hate each other, you do business with each other the same way Sean and Brett did, you know, that type of stuff. So I've always in the back of my head thought, how much of this relationship is really frayed? How much are they selling? I don't know. But to go this deep into the book about it, I think probably gives you a more sense of how real that all is.
You might be referring to the last woman standing match at Evolution, which was exceptional. I mean, it was just great knockdown drag out. I think it was the first ever last woman standing match in WWE, now that I think about it. But if you get the book and you read it or you listen to it, it's pretty clear that it's real. I mean, she doesn't really kayfabe in the book. She just straight up calls bullshit, bullshit. And that actually brings me to my next topic. I'll segue into it in a moment. But she calls what's bullshit, bullshit, and what is real, real. And it's pretty clear that the relationship with Charlotte, she pinpoints all these individual little moments where it's like, oh, I think we're kind of falling apart a little bit. And then when it actually transpires, the belt incident she addresses, I'll give you a little spoiler alert. In the memoir, she calls, I'm not going to say the word, she calls Charlotte the C word, but not like she's insulting her today, but her thought at the time. There's a moment where she calls her that. And that's a little teased, another tease to read the book.
The match was Survivor Series 2021. That's the one.
That's the one you're talking about? Okay. That was a good match too. Not as good as Last Woman Standing, but also a damn good match. Regarding the calling bullshit, bullshit, and, you know, reality, reality, I loved how Becky broke down the changes to the creative process and the way everything has just transpired under Paul Levesque, not just from the standpoint of like long-term storytelling is important. We say that all the time, but why it matters and why the product is improved by it. And also, we talk about this on the show, Chris, all the time, how the fans may not like something one week. And in the past, that's all it was. But now you can't just sit there and say, this is shit, you know, it's going nowhere, it's terrible, because it might be part of a bigger story that we may well end up enjoying once it's seen through. And that being a creative change that, you know, we've noticed as outsiders under Paul Levesque, but the fact that the talent is saying the same thing. And by the way, not just Becky Lynch, AJ Styles came out and had very similar comments just recently. There was one or two other superstars that said the same thing. But the fact that Becky broke it down in that manner, again, something I would have loved to explore a little bit more, but it just made all the sense in the world.
It was interesting to hear her say that, because I think that backs up what longtime listeners of the show have heard from you and me, which is, hey, there was something on Raw we didn't like. You know, I'll give it a couple more weeks to kind of see where this is going. We're not instantly crapping on it, because Triple H got us to buy in to the long-term stuff, that there is a purpose to every single thing we see on the screen. The first several years we did this pod, that was not the case.
Right.
But it changed pretty quickly to the point where, hey, if something doesn't go well one week, we'll see. We're not totally out on it. And that's a trust you build with an audience. And those are things you can't measure week to week in the ratings. That's just being willing to buy in or cut something some slack and give it time, which has been a really refreshing feeling. And clearly Becky on the inside feels the same.
Well, that's why we introduced those provisional grades, like in Good, Bad, and Ugly, because it's like, look, this week, bad, but it might be good down the line. We can't say it's definitely bad forever, right? So that's exactly why we've had to adjust that segment to a degree. Chris, that's pretty much all I had. You know, everyone listened to the interview. They don't need us blabbing on about it forever. Is there anything else you took away from the interview or anything you wanted to discuss before we get out of here?
She seemed to really appreciate that you said that you love the name Rue.
I do. I love it.
It's a good name.
I love it. Now, I'll be candid. If I had a daughter or a son, would I name them Rue? I don't know. And like, I don't, this is going to sound bad. Okay. I don't mean it this way though. But like, I think it's a great, my dog right now, his name's Moose. And I think carrying on the ooh sound in a pet would be really cool. So I would love that if I was to get another dog. I think Rue would be a great name for a dog, especially a female dog. So
you just could call it Oos.
Yeah. And I didn't really think, I thought Zeus. I'd never thought Oos. Oos is very interesting. I don't know that the Samoans and the bloodline would appreciate that. But I do think it's actually a beautiful name for a child or for a dog or anything like that. I wasn't going to explain it that way. It would have been very convoluted for me to say that to her. But I do. I love it from the literal first second I heard it. I was like, that is a real inventive, smart, like cute name for a kid, and certainly for an adult. Also, you know how like
she will be an adult one day.
You have to consider that. There's people who don't consider that. That's super important. Speaking as a single man without children, I do know that you need to consider that, you know, when the child gets older, that name has to work. The other reason it's so cool though is like, you know, the name Ruth, and no offense if anyone is named Ruth and you're listening to the show, I'm not insulting you, but that's a name that's gone out of style to a degree, right? This is almost like a reincarnation of that as something more modern. I just find it really inventive. I think they made it. I mean, it's not my place to comment on their children's name, but I think it's great. So that's it.
I agree. I completely agree with the name breakdown.
All right. That's a little bit of baby naming to wrap up this edition of the Getting Over Wrestling podcast. As mentioned, this is a two for Tuesday. So thrilled that you joined us for our one-on-one with the man, Becky Lynch. But please do not forget, we have a WWE episode coming before this day, Tuesday, is out. Of course, you may not be listening to the show on Tuesday, but I digress. On the way out, allow me to hit you with some reminders first that the Getting Over Wrestling podcast
is all about Defy.
So please head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Take a little extra time. Leave a 5-star written review. Maybe mention how much you loved this interview with Becky Lynch and let everyone know how much you enjoy listening to the show. Please do not forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. And please also remember,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up. You will get bonus audio, the fastest 5 minutes in professional wrestling, instant reaction audio to Raw, NXT, Dynamite, and SmackDown every single week, along with exclusive news posts every Friday. Again, buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Thank you to Vintage Chris Mimi for joining. Thank you so much to the man, Becky Lynch, for stopping by the Getting Over Wrestling podcast. This is the Silver King signing off and leaving you with just 3 final words. Bye for now.